It started with a coup. It became a revolution. Now it's the voice of a people demanding to be heard. At Insight Myanmar, we aim to document this unfolding story, one that reflects the resilience, courage, and determination of a nation. Join us as we explore the voices shaping this pivotal moment in history.
Welcome back. I am joined today by Nietzsche from Myanography, and this is the third of three English language interviews that we are conducting with Myanography, focused on the election, both the process of the election and the fallout of the election. In this final episode, we will be predominantly examining not just a recapitulation of the electoral process and the many ways in which the people were forced to suffer through it, but more importantly, the subsequent impacts that the electoral cycle has had on local communities around Myanmar. So before we get into that, Nietzsche, thank you very much for joining us. And I want to give you the chance to introduce yourself and to, for those who maybe haven't heard the other two episodes, introduce what Myanography is as well.
My name is Nietzsche. For security reason, I will briefly introduce myself. I have been working as a social science researcher since Cyclone Nargis in 2008. Currently, I am working as a senior researcher with the Myanography Research Project. Yes. Myanography, we are working actually in 22 state and region places. Since the military coup happened, research organization cannot do continuously do research work. So we give research training, the social science research training to the young people who are very interested in research work. So those people are introduced by our CSO network and who we trusted, CSO network and other NGO network, so that we give social science research training for 15 days. This program was started in 2022, mid 2022. Then we continue every 6 months. We are studying local governance situations, in those state and regions. Yes,
It's incredible work, and I think it's one of those examples of finding education solutions despite very heavy repression, because the ultimate objective, one of the many ultimate objectives of the military, is to stop the flow of information and to stop the education of the people, because they are much easier to control if they are uneducated. As Kim Yong himself very, very avidly worked to achieve. So with that said, Let's recapitulate on the electoral process. So we have, in the past two interviews, we've discussed the 3 days over which the election took place, which itself was highly controversial and a very strange choice. But let's just recap the things, because it wasn't just that an election was held. The participation rate of the election was relatively high, even if we accept that the military's numbers are somewhat falsified. What were the main issues with the election? What were the main complaints of the people in who felt that they had to participate in the election, and who felt that there was no real legitimate opportunity for them to engage democratically?
Yes. There are many, people, before the election, four, five months, before election, people are not interested. Even 1 month before election, they are not interested. People were not interested about the election. They don't want to vote. They decided they didn't want to vote for the election. But later, many local authority present and also give pressure and also it is not systematic, but they were pressured many different ways. For example, one in Dongwu study area, a local administrator called to the displacement people, IDP people, and told them they knew that whether they were a family member of a military recruitment age. Now, so in the in each households, and also they also openly threatened that if they did not vote those family, they could be taken for military service. No, and also in Hindra, Hindra is in Ayawadi region. So the local administrator also directly pressured a community researcher who had joined a civil disobedient movement by saying that they still had to record the CDM participant CDM list, no? And suggesting that voting would be safer for them like that. And also different experiences in Nichina, in our study area, an official announcement and warned that everyone who disrupt the election would be faced severe punishment. And at the same time, there were also effort to persuade people connected to the military to vote. And also in Longlong, the Nindari region, even though there was no, in Longlong, it is our study area is competitive, armed group area. So, in those areas, they didn't give direct pressure, but indirectly, they pressure to the traveler when they pass the gate, we call check point. The traveler were told to vote after their document were checked. And also, in Mandalay, what we heard from the community researcher is an announcement were made through the loudspeaker, telling people to vote and saying that voting was their responsibility. Even when they give the pressure, they are giving you have to be you should vote. You have to vote, no? The party or the candidate who is walk peacefully and who could walk according to military instructions, not according to military instruction, who could walking together with the military people, not military people, military organization, armed crew, not? So they should, you should go to those party, those people, not like that, they suggested like that. And also one in Yangon area, like all the like government staff are pressure to vote for the military, and also the party who close to the military, like that. And there are also cases where people travel to the road in Mandalay. No? It is in Mandalay. It was happened in Mandalay, like on the road where you stop and check motorbike and license. And then the police, no? They question at the checkpoint, they question to the traveler if they were already checked their voter list or not. And then when people say yes, they ask the voter list number, what is your number, like that. So if they one of our community researchers said share his like a neighbor experience, his neighbor experiences that his neighbor was asked his voter number, and then he couldn't tell the his number, so that he was beaten by the police at the checkpoint. So those things happen to people forced to vote. No? It is a kind of force, no, to vote. And also a lot of like a mentally threatening, like where also happened. You know, like people like who, yeah, they were like saying that you are if you don't vote, if you didn't vote, you might your family who are at the age of the military construction age now, so maybe constructed after the election like that now, so maybe they might have a lot of like difficulty for travel and also to go abroad. So those things happen, those threatening and pressure happen before the election, yes.
So there's definitely a lot going on there.
Yes.
And it's very interesting that in a lot of corrupt systems, in a lot of fraudulent elections, we sort of think of the government being interested in scaring away voters who do not support them, or trying to pressure people into voting for their parties. But in this case, The objective was to legitimize the election. And so they just wanted to get maximum participation. And then they didn't have to worry who you voted for, really, because any real opposition party was not allowed to participate in the election anyway. So the appearance of a legitimate democratic election could be maintained. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that you mentioned that you have been doing social work since Cyclone Nargis. And the reason that's interesting to me is because I know that not long after Cyclone Nargis, the military organized the referendum on the 2008 constitution. And that referendum occurred at a time when a lot of people, particularly in Ayawadi, did not have access to shelter and housing and were still basically internally displaced. And despite this, the military announced, you know, like 98 or 97% participation and similar percentage of support for the 2008 constitution. So what I wanted to ask you is if you can give any insight, how would you compare the organization and the manipulation of the 2008 constitution referendum to the 2025-2026 sham election?
Yes, you know, this is my personality. It is very much different according to my knowledge. In 2008, during the you know, 2008, people, you know, like the civilian, they really went to vote. Now, myself, 2010, not election, we really went to vote. We were very active to check our voter list, and also we you know, like we have a future. We can imagine our future. We can imagine who we want to select that who we wanted to select now in that election, and who we want to see how we want to see our government. Those things, we have a lot of imaginations, but this election, it is very clearly, we can say, like, very sham election. You know, like, people are forced to vote, and also people didn't get, like, good information, appropriate information regarding the election. You know, like, people are not interested. People were not interested to about the election for this time. This is just like a military created election. This is just for the legitimacy by the international government. So, a lot of community researcher also share those experiences. What they said is this election, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of pressure, and even a lot of pressure we are given. Many people didn't went for vote. No, so and also even people are not interested about the election result. No, what would be happen? Yeah, we don't have we cannot imagine our future, what would be happen after the election, our future would be happen. So we could not imagine. We can say clearly that this is just a military created election, and just fake election. And even after finishing this election, nothing would change. So, yeah, we have such differences, yes.
And I mean, I can't really imagine what it would feel like going to the polls in an election that you believe to be fraudulent, knowing that it won't make a difference, knowing that you don't have the option to vote for the parties that you actually feel would represent you, and knowing that you're being forced to participate in basically a performance. Yes. For the benefit of the military. And I wonder whether you've had the opportunity. I know that you extensively interviewed people across Myanmar in a lot of different electorates about the elections. Mm-hmm. And I know that you some people you spoke to before the election, some people you spoke to after the elections, because they took place over a month and a half. But since then, have you asked anyone how they felt about going to the polls? Like, did anyone feel like, or anyone mention that they felt that they still wanted to try, that when they put their ballot in the box, even within the military system, they were hoping to vote strategically for some party that might make a difference? Or do people generally feel that it doesn't matter which box you put a cross in, it's not going to make a difference, it's just a piece of paper, ignore it, go cast your vote and then go home to your family and forget about it? What was the attitude of people who went to these elections?
Yes, according to our research finding and according to our community researcher, yes, before the election, community, all the community were given different pressure and threatening, so that they decided who we have to vote. No, they decided one level, they have one stage. No, they have decision making for their family or for their own, themselves. No, they have that stage. And then when we talk about to the people, they are saying that they choose if they found they might choose now if they found Dainda is ethnic, no, ethnic city, no, mm-hmm. Any ethnicity's name, they would choose those party. Even they don't know those party, they would choose those party. Even they don't know who is the candidate for those party, they would choose like that. And some people, they choose depending on the person. And some people, local people say that we in Burmese we call asem hoi bio. Asem hoi bio is like if it is not like a it is not like a green. Green is a military, not USDP body. We can give our vote to other not except green. No? So they decided like that. Yes, they decided like that. But you know, like most of the people, most of the people like who give the vote. Are aware from the military size, according to the community researcher. Like many people's voter in the voter list, many people are not in, included in the voter list, as well as even though they are afraid, many people didn't go to vote, according to our community researcher. But some people who are really afraid, especially like IDP people, especially who stay with the guest house, guest list certificate. Now they went to vote. Now, and also people who afraid their children, like they might conscripted for the military service. Now, so they went for vote. So like that. And one thing what we heard is like some people community they between them they have like a discussion informal discussion like we should vote to the USDP party because now if we should if we vote to the other party it might happen like a battle fighting between PDF and military, then they might military might target target our village that our village, and then they might destroy if we didn't vote to their party, so that they vote for the military parties like that. We heard like that.
It's incredibly telling that people have been terrified and have been manipulated to the point where even when they are in private,
yes,
they are saying we should vote for the military so they don't come and kill us afterwards.
Yes.
It's I think more so than anything else that we have discussed in the last two interviews, I think that alone makes it clear how unreliable and irrelevant this election is from a democratic perspective, and that it cannot be considered to represent the will of the Myanmar people because it does not.
Yes.
But so on that point, then let's talk about the reaction to this internationally, because the objective of the military was to stage a fraudulent election so that they could pretend to be democratically elected, which even though everyone in the international community knows is a sham election, will give an excuse to certain countries to recognize the military and therefore to do business with them and therefore to trade in military goods with them. So what has happened since the election? So the final day of the election was back in January, so some months ago. So what has happened since then with regards to the international response and recognition of this election?
The international recognition, many people, country, they didn't accept this election, as well as, this is based on my knowledge, but China and also Russia and also India, big country, no, they recognize the military election. I don't have that much knowledge, and also we didn't have that conversation to our community researcher. But based on my knowledge, many people, didn't accept this election. And even if they accept this election, I think they are accepting this. It is not it is, yeah, very shameful not to accept such like a election. You know, like, when I talk to the to one candidate, my friend who is a candidate from like from Yangon. So what he said is that all our creator, the military, they to get the international like recognition, they prepare very well. You know, they didn't campaign process, not campaign that much. They just like put their signboard here and there. They just do like that. They didn't do like a very strong campaign for the election. Mm. And also he is not from the military party. He is private now, private candidate. So what he said is even every candidate were informed that if they want to go to the campaign process, they have to report all their trip plan to the military, to the UEC. They have to submit all their trip plan. How many minutes they have to stop this post, and how many how many hours they have to do this job and that job, this campaign and that campaign, like that. And also what he said is, every trip plan plus, how many pamphlets they are going to distribute. So those things they have to submit details so that of the limitation, many limitation like funding limitation, other like limitations. Now they cannot do like the candidate now cannot do election campaign that much. My friend like that.
And I think that's ridiculous. So to clarify this, you're not saying that the USDP party, the leadership of the USDP party, is telling its own USDP candidates that you have to submit records of where you campaign and how much you spend and where you travel to the USDP headquarters, which is not unusual for a political party to do. You're saying that all of the candidates of all of the political parties had to submit their expenditures and their travel and their campaigns to the central military authority.
Yeah, to the UEC, no? To the UEC.
To the UEC.
Yes, they have to submit now. Submit their trip plan, detailed trip plan. If they want to stop like a Ledan now in Myanmar, Ledan is a very big boy now. So if they want to do campaign in that boy, how many minutes they want to campaign? How many pamphlets they want to distribute in that place? Like that total, how many pamphlets they are going to distribute like that? So every detail plan they have to support. So they don't know they don't know what is the like behind. They also concern for their security. So that many candidate they dare not to do those things. So I heard from my friend like that.
I mean, that's again, this is just more evidence and very clear and very poignant evidence that the campaigns were rigged. It's not just that the election was a sham, but it the entire process is fraudulent. But one of the very carefully done things about this election, if we look back to the Myanmar election of 1990, when the NLDP won in a landslide, and I think back then it was still the SLORC who were in charge, who simply declared after the election, well, the election is nullified and we have taken power and the NLD representatives are arrested. That was very blatant electoral rigging. And we look at the 2010 election, which the NLD boycotted because the circumstances of the election were unacceptable. those were very easy for the international community to reject because they were very obviously fraudulent. But what is being done here, and this is something that I think is very important for people to understand, is that the pressures are more subtle. People, as you say, people when they were in private were saying we should vote for the military because maybe the military will destroy our village if we don't. Mm-hmm. Even if the military never said this, people are thinking it. And the candidates were not told you are not allowed to campaign.
Yes.
But they were told you have to tell us exactly when you campaign and where you campaign and how you campaign and how much you spend on your campaign. So yes. There's a very subtle implication.
Yes.
That you can be punished, you can be arrested, you can be tracked. So the military is not, it's difficult to accuse the military directly of saying you interfered with this candidate.
Yes.
Because they can say, well, I never interfered. I just told all candidates that they have to submit records to the Electoral Commission. So it's much more subtle. It's much more cleverly done, but the end result is the same. The people are terrified. The candidates are terrified. And there is no genuine democratic choice on the ballots that people felt forced to go in and vote for. So it's intelligent, but it's also very cruel and very exploitative of the Myanmar people. Yes. So yeah, I'm very glad that we're able to discuss this. I'm very glad that we're able to bring this information out. So what is the attitude now? Because of course, the end result of this election is, okay, the military retains power, which we all knew that they would, because that is why they've done their election. Mm. And has anything changed? Have people noticed in their communities that the central government authorities, whether they're township officers or you know what have you, have changed in any way as a result of this election? Are the attitudes different? Is the messaging different? Do people feel that? I know people had a lot of anxiety in the lead up to the election. They had a lot of fear. You were mentioning that a lot of internally displaced people were being threatened with having their children conscripted. A lot of townships felt afraid that they would be punished in some way, shape, or form. Now that the election is over, is there a bit of relief? Do people feel better, or is that fear-mongering continuing?
Yes. I also the same question to the our community researcher. So what they said is like regarding the threatening before the election, they didn't take any action. They didn't even check who vote or who didn't vote. It is just for threatening for the election day. They realize like that. They realize this is actually they just the threatening is just for the vote, not to vote, not to get people's vote, not. So they use a lot, like many different kinds of like threatening. But after the election, they didn't take any action regarding the who vote or who doesn't vote, who vote to which party or who doesn't vote for which party. So what the community people said is because of like they won't landslide. Now they won't landslide. They said that, you know, like a USDP party everywhere, like they won't. Only in our research area, like a Naka, Mon, in these three areas, the local party, local ethnic party won the election. But the rest place, USDP, even like many Naka area, Mon area, USDP won, but in our study area, those three places are won by the local ethnic party. So even a local ethnic party won the election, they didn't give important position for those ethnic party, I heard. From the community researcher, like for example, in Naga area, Naga National Party won in three townships, but you know, because of the PR, system, not BR, they call BR SNI, not BR system, like USDP party, only the main position, decision-making position were given to the USDP candidate. So in Nagaland, Naga is a self-administered zone. So in that Naga area, they have to form the Data Usi Apwe is like a self-administered zones, like administrative body. So in that body, all the main positions are given to the USDP party candidate, not the Naga party. Naga National Party just get the member position. Since they went, what people are saying in the community level is since the USDP party got position they went, and they also won many places. They didn't make any problems, not problems regarding the voting voter. This is what I heard from the community researcher. And also one of my friend, who is a candidate, the same person that I share you, he said that the USDP party is very clever, and they already, made any complaint now from the other candidate. Now they have well planned, they did well planned not to make any complaint from the other party. They didn't do any campaign very seriously. All the voter system are electronic. So these are their system not to make complaints. But behind, they were given a lot of pressure like that. So yeah, these are what I heard from the community researcher.
So the question is sort of, where does this really leave us? Because it kind of feels that nothing's really happened. The election sort of came and went, but from the perspective of the people,
yes.
There's no, the people, it basically feels like the people have no connection to these elections. They're yeah. puppets who are dragged in. They have to participate.
Yes.
But, as you say, even in Naga, and the Naga are a very distinct group. They're a very strong ethnic identity a group. And even their representative is a USDP representative. Mm. It's absolutely crazy. So it just feels like there's no reason for the people to connect with the elections, no reason for the people to take these elections seriously or to care about them. But at the same time, they don't have the choice. They can't ignore them because, as you said earlier on, somebody was beaten by the police just for not knowing his electoral registration number.
Yes.
Which is ridiculous, which is so absurd. It's difficult to really imagine it.
Yes.
So this is the question: what is going through people's minds basically at this point? The election is done. Myanmar elections are typically done every 5 years, which is obviously why they wanted to start the process in 2025, because the last election was in 2020 and the one before then was 2015. Mm. So the military chose this election to continue the trend, to make it appear as though if you look up Myanmar on a Wikipedia page, it just looks like Myanmar had federal elections in 2010, 2015, 2020, 2025. It just appears as though it's a normal functioning democracy that has elections every 5 years. So the election has come and gone. Nothing has really changed. How do the people feel currently? Has this election changed anything about how they perceive the military regime? Do people have any hopes going forward? Have people expressed any ideas or attitudes towards the 2030 elections, which hopefully will not be done under the military dictatorship, but we have to wonder. And where do the people stand now that the election's done? Have they kept it out of their minds and ignored it and moved on with their lives, or is it something that they're still quite bitter about and quite upset about?
Yes. According to our community researchers, conversation to the people and according to their own perspective, perspective. Now, what they said is like the military, they already took the place that they want. They already took the seat that they want. They already took the voter or the votes. The votes that they want, so that didn't come because of that. No, because of that, some people feel like that. But some people feel no strange. We already know they will take the place that they want. So even people are saying that me online, even though the final presidents, now union presidents election hasn't done, his family already moved to the president house. Presidential house now. So the people are saying that we already know that it would happen like that. So no strange now. But for their safety, for their family's safety, they vote. No, some people say like that. Some people say like, we don't interest. No, we didn't interest about the election. We didn't go. We didn't vote. No, they are saying like that. but when I ask, no, but now when during our community, before the election, when we ask about. To whom you vote? Many people are saying that we will choose ethnic party name, not the party with ethnic name. We will choose except green like that. Now, so why the in those place now? Why military won the election? Now, when we ask like that, because many people say that most of the voters come from military supporter and also pro SAC and also the government staff like that. I have also some siblings who are working under the SAC government. They don't like SAC, but USDP they don't like, but because they are, since they are working SAC, under the SAC government, they said that they have to vote to the USDP party. They have no choice. They didn't force to give USDP party, but what they were informed is like, you should choose the party who loyalty to the sitter is like a military, no? So you should vote to such, you should choose such party. They were informed like that, so indirectly it is like a threatening, no? For their choice. So those things happen, and also before the election, I also traveled in Myanmar, some place of Myanmar. So we took the a motor boat, and in that motor boat, one of school headmaster was there. We took together the motor boat, and other two teachers were also included in that motor boat. And what the headmaster read out the letter that the letter which is related to the military, you know, like election, she read out for the rest of two teachers. Yeah, I cannot hear very clearly, but what I heard clearly is anyone who who disrupt the election may give the death penalty. So I also heard with my own ear, no? So those things, yeah, I also heard from my own ear, yes.
And this is, again, just very emblematic of the military. I mean, their overuse I would argue that any use of the death penalty is an overuse, but the military have been particularly keen. I remember them imposing martial law back in March of 2021 in places like Hendaya, and by the end of the month, I think you know, significant portions of Yangon and significant portions of Mandalay were on shoot to kill orders, and then of course we remember the executions that that took place not long after that. I actually believe we are currently maybe one day after what would be the birthday of Nitric Acid, who was executed by the military. So the presence of the death penalty as a tool, in addition to the fact that the military have shown that they are very comfortable with extrajudicial killing, summary executions of people just because they feel like it, I think the impact of the threat of death and the threat of violence, of arson, of bombings cannot be underestimated, because it is something that the military have shown again and again and again that they are willing to do. Even if they don't need to do it, they'll do it just because they can.
Yes.
And this population suffers this every day.
Yes.
It's quite horrifying. And so then that the another follow-up that I wanted, and apologies if you already touched on this, the conscriptions. So they were threatening a lot of people by saying, well, you could be conscripted or your children could be conscripted. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people went to vote to prevent this from happening. But
yes,
as the military often does, you know, they will still want people to be conscripted. They still want numbers to be increased.
Yes.
Particularly the Tamador has had a fetish for a 500,000 manpower. And they've been lying for many, many years about the size of the military.
Yes.
The military is considerably smaller than they pretend that it is. But so what this means is that local conscription officers, recruitment officers, are probably being given a quota. And they have to reach that quota, whether they want to or not. They have to reach that quota. So my concern would be that they would use the threat of conscription to get people to vote. But then as soon as the election is done, they would still conscript those people, because the conscription office still needs to reach its quota. It still needs to do that. So this is the question. Does anybody feel like compliance with the election has protected them from conscription or their family from conscription? Does anybody feel like the military has genuinely said, okay, you did your part, you played along, we're going to leave you alone? Or has the conscription continued in the way that it was going before?
Yes, conscription continue very much, and even wasn't then before the election. All the research, community researcher study place reported that conscriptions are more serious after the election. You know, like even what they heard is now even like a woman are going to conscript that. Going to be conscripted. Mm. And also what we heard is in like some area, I don't want to mention the place, but in some for the security, some area, like a community researcher are saying that after 15 years, they no question that what the military said is no question. After 15 years, people are wise, not a man will be constructed now. They need more like a soldier, no? So that because of, even though like election has done like, you know, every many place there, fighting between like PDF and like ethnic armed organization, and also between ethnic armed organizations and military, between like you know, like PDF and military, like a civil war, like more and more in some, like even in Donghu, every day like they can hear the like artillery shooting, and also like a lot of like airstrike bombing, and also like a lot of like exploring like weapons, bombed, nah? So people are facing a lot of like fear, those regarding the conscription, you know, before the election. Some people, you know, the community, some local people had like a slightly, or I don't know how to say, a few like a hope if like a village, the election has would done if not in like the situation would be a little bit peaceful, or like would be changed, not they had that they had that small hope, not, but it is not coming true. People are saying that it is more difficult. So that when I ask now to the community researcher, how is the situation post election? People are saying that no one interested about the election. No, you know, like what is happening? What is going the new government is like the new elected like people, like a candidate meet to the people, whether they meet, they have like discussion to the people, to the community or not, no? I ask like that, but they are saying that the community, even they don't know who is elected, who is, even who, the people who vote or who didn't vote, they don't know who is the candidate, no? Who is the elected person, who is the, will be the parliamentary like a member, no? They don't interest, even they don't know. No one is talking about that. No, people are just struggling for their security and for their, you know, like for their, you know, like everyday survival. Because like after the military, you know, like the petrol, no? The petrol, like fuel, no? Diesel price are bombing up, and that is one problem. And another is like since the economic crisis are like more and more, every like commodity price are like increasing daily by daily, so that people are struggling for those things. And also, you know, like regarding your question, I will go back to your question. So, military conscription are happening in every like a month. For example, like even like a you know, like last week the grade 12 exam finished, no? So the people are much worried about their children. They are taking care of their children. When they go to school, the parents follow to their children to school, then they pick up their children by themselves, and then they are like those things they did because of they were much worried about for their children's security. They were thinking after the military, you know, like after the exam, the military might grab their children, no? So they much worry about that. And also and you know, like in Naga, the police and soldier were also deployed in school. And also, like officially for the they are saying that this is for the exam security. But this create more fear among the public because you know, grade 12 students were already 18 years old. So most of the, you know, grade 12 students were like already 18 years old. Because of this, some parents said that they would immediately take their children back to their village, no, after the exam, worrying that you know, they might be taken from recruitment. Huh? And some also said that they could not keep their children in the village for longer. And they are like, they were thinking like they sent to the forest, no, to the forest in Nagaland, in Naga area. They also send their children to India size, Nagaland size. I heard that they sent, as soon as their exam finished, they sent to the Naga area, because every month the military people grabbing the children. What I heard from the Naga researcher is like end of February, Miao Lai visited to join the opening ceremony of the Chindwin River cross, like the bridge cross to Chindwin River. Now, so during his visit, he scolded official people now. For not getting like people from Naga area. So actually, you know, like Naga area, what they said is every month recruitment case are happening. And also like Hindada, in Tonggu, they are Tonggu area, and Mandalay area, they are also reported that military recruitment are more seriously. And on the other hand, they are still paying the money, I think you might also know about that. Every month, what administrator collected money from the local people, not to involve their children for recruitment. So they collect money from the local community, and then what they said is they buy other person for the military service instead of their own people, and then they give money not to exchange other person that they also grabbed it to other place now, and then they give money to those people, and then they sent for military service as their representative what not as their particular what for their representative now for the military service now like that. So those money are still paid, but this day what they had is they don't need money. They only want they don't need money, but they only want people who are turned 18 years and who are under 35 now. So they only want people. Mm. They and also this day they are saying that even you give money, it doesn't work. Your name is listed for the military service, you have no excuse. So those things are happening. So people are much worried, and they are fleeing here and there. They are hiding in the forest. So I heard from Naga researcher that this day there is no man in the village. Staying in the forest.
If the men have left the village and they're hiding in the forest, and that makes a lot of sense, what does that mean for the economy of the village? What does that mean for the village's ability to work and to produce food? Because I would imagine that, obviously women work very hard and also go out into the fields. I'm not saying that women aren't capable of doing the farming work, because I know that they do. But with half the labor force gone, I would imagine that this has an incredibly serious impact on the village's ability to bring in the harvest or to sow or to generally, you know, do all of the agriculture and the economic activities that they normally do.
Yes. So far, January, February, March, till April, March is agriculture season. They hasn't started yet. In April, they would start. But what I heard is the mangrove, they flee to like a forest, and then they make the shifty cultivation in those area. I heard like that, like shifty cultivation in those area. So what the official people also said is like every like month, like township administrator, administrator, and also like a military officer and police officer, including those important, they said important person. No? This is according to the community researchers' word. Yeah, those important person, big position people, and other police and soldier, they visited to the village. Occasionally, they visited to the village and they search people for the military service. No? So they have their people's list, and then they came and they asked by name. And then what they said is, you might heard about our visiting before we reach in your village, no? So that you just flee to the forest and you just go like you just go out from the village, no? If someone is like grabbed it or like adopted, no? By us, no? We won't. No negotiation, no any reason, no reason, no negotiation. We are truly, we are surely to send to the military service. Nah? So in the past, nah, they can negotiate with money. They can negotiate by using other channel, like a religious channel, literature and culture mm-hmm. channel. Those channel they use and they negotiate with the officer. Then they flee, they release, nah? Like that. They release. But this... From now, no, what they said, from now, we don't have that like a negotiation anymore. So you, since you heard, no, our traveling, no, you just flee. Don't meet with us, no. Don't be meet. How to say? Yeah, they are saying that just flee from the village. They also suggested to the villager mm-hmm. like that. What I heard, yeah. Yeah, because of what they said is we are coming, we come, by the, you know, like, authority and responsibility, no, by the, you know, yeah. upper, we call, in Burmese, we call Atembe. Atembe is like, upper, like, level, instruction and upper level, like, authority, no?
A higher authority, yeah.
The higher authority, yes, higher authority.
Yeah.
We came. So we have to do our responsibility. So that you just, you need to be clever. They remind to the local people like that.
Yeah. I mean, it's horrific. And I want to go back to something you said, because I want to make sure that we get this on the record. You said, and I want to make sure this is correct, you said that it was announced that anybody over the age of 15 is eligible for conscription. Is that true?
Yeah, I also did follow up, but we didn't see any official document. But when I asked now to the community researcher, is that true? What they said is, this day true, is that true or is that not true? Is no, there is no like that question. Every rumor are also true. They are saying that now, even rumor new is coming true. So, we have to believe this now. They are saying like that. We don't have like, this is a, true. This is true. This is not true. We cannot say like that. In situation in Myanmar, you know, like, military are using like a rumor. Then they take action like according to the rumor like that. No. So, you know, like authority, different level authority are using like, power abuse. No. But no actions are like, taken. So yeah, the rule, any like a rule is like on their mouth, so we cannot say, you cannot ask true or not. They reply me like that. No, they reply me like that, and also like, you know, what they heard is like on the social media, they read that in your house, if there is two person, your shoes should be two. You have two shoes, only two shoes. If you have more shoes, they will like enter in the village in without any reason, and they can check. No, then they arrested like that. So I also asked, is that true? They said that yeah, it is true. No, you cannot say yeah whether it is true or not, but. Yeah, even the authority, different level authority are using power abuse. Things like Myanmar is very fragile. Every sector every sector has been collapsed now. So these are true. They are saying like that.
But so I think what you're saying makes sense. I understand what you're saying, that we cannot. To pose the question, is something true, implies that there is a distinction between rumors and what is actual enacted policy, but everyone is behaving individually and independently, and there's no centralized action plan. But so let me rephrase then. Has anyone actually obtained any evidence or any example of a 15, a 16, or a 17-year-old person being conscripted?
One case. I forgot the region, the study place, but one place. The student was conscripted, and then they. In Donggu, in Pago region, one student was, he is only grade 9. He has finished his exam and he was constructed by the military. So, but he released because of not the ward administrator is very good and very good connection with the military. What she said is, the ward administrator and one other like organized CSO something, I forgot the name. So the ward administrator and those two, one organization together with our ward administrator, they follow the case so that that student released, but they paid 50 lakh to the military like it is like more like kidnap now. So they give that money and then they release the boy. What she said, the community researcher said is, if they have good what administrator has not good connection, no one will follow and release that. Yes.
And for the record, so 50 lakh, it's 5 million chat, which even before the coup was in excess of $3,000. Obviously now the currency has collapsed, so it's a little bit different, but it is an enormous sum of money.
Yes. Yeah.
That is a lot of money in Myanmar. So this is just the because this is the thing. Conscription itself is highly questionable, but as a general principle, international law considers it to be acceptable for a government to conscript, even forcible conscription, as a need for domestic labor or as a need for domestic defense and peacekeeping. But the conscription of persons under the age of 18 is a very different matter internationally and legally. Yes. So. This statement that whether the statement is that the military are forcibly conscripting or, as the case may be, abducting people under the age of 18, or whether the statement is just that the military is threatening to conscript / abduct people under the age of 18, I think this is a very, very serious offense. Yes. And it is very important that the international community be aware that the military is threatening, even if they haven't done it yet, the fact that the military makes the threat and the fact that the population knows the military well enough to believe that this is something that the military will do, because we know that they have done it in the past many, many times.
Yes.
I think this makes this a very serious offense, and we have to be conscious of it. So with that and with, you know, recapitulating on this point that, as you were saying earlier, the military comes in and they make these promises and say, well, or threats, and say, well, if you don't vote for us, if you don't play along with the sham election, then you will be punished with conscription. And then the people do play along with the sham election.
Yes.
And the conscriptions, as you say, have only gotten worse.
Yes.
People have not been saved or protected from them.
Yes.
The situation is dire. So what, as we sort of conclude this three-part discussion, the English language discussion, we will also be discussing this in Myanmar. But as we conclude this discussion on the election, what do we have going forward? What are we anticipating in the future? Is there anything, any hope that anything can be done, or is this just, this is a thing that the military has done and the people continue to suffer and there is nothing that we can do and there is nothing that is likely to change in the future? What is the future outlook?
Yes. Yes, according to the community researchers, what they said is, regarding that question, we also discussed about a similar question with the community researcher, and what they said is, as long as military get power, now nothing would change. And it is no questions like over like 70 years the military regime, control the country, and nothing hasn't changed. Nothing has changed. So the people are saying that if international people or country and people recognize this election, it is very painful for the Myanmar people. You know, many people lost their family. Many people joined to the military service and by force, and they lost a lot, both sides, People's Defense Force, ethnic EAO sides, and also three sides, military side, our own people are fighting, our own people are fighting each other, they constructed many people, and then they give only 3 months training, military training, and then they send to the battlefield. So that what I heard is that they never use the real soldier in the front line. Only the new recruitment soldier are used in front line. So that they were killed. Many people lost their life. Now, even in our community research area, many recruitment people, not the people, lost their life. So these are hard in every month, every day. So the people have have a lot of trauma. So if in future people, some people hope if the military let's give up, follow according to military instructed, no, a few people have that thought, because no, they want to stay peacefully. Now people, they don't know the what is the polity, what is they don't know about the polity in deeply, but they want to stay safely, and they want to stay peacefully with their family. But people who lost their own family, people who lost their father, their brother, their sister, now their mother, they are very they very sad. They are very sad. They are saying, in the future, now if international recognized military, what would happen? No, our life are whatever we had done is nothing. No, it's nothing. No, it's gone. It's already gone. We call in Burmese "dethe yiton." "Dethe yiton" is you pure water on the sand. No, so the sand, it is easily to sink the water. No, to link the water. So it is like that. No, they are saying like that. So yeah, we even it is we don't have any hope if the military continue the power. Now,
I mean, fundamentally, I think what you're saying is completely in line with what pretty much every single person that we have interviewed over the last 5 years has said, which is that the critical and essential obstacle to Myanmar's success, to Myanmar's democracy, to Myanmar's stability and unity and prosperity is the military. That without removing the military, Myanmar cannot prosper. And that once the military as an obstacle is removed, the possibility for Myanmar to become an incredibly forward-thinking, rapidly developing, economically strong, politically stable country is very high, and that we should all be struggling for this. So as we conclude here, I want to thank you. I want to thank all of Myanography, and I definitely want to thank the actual researchers in the field, because they are the ones who are in harm's way and they are the ones who are taking a risk to get this information out and the information that we desperately need. And we have to be very respectful and very appreciative of the hard work that they do and the danger that they assume in the process. Anyway, so in concluding, this has been a three-part series on this sham election and the fallout of the election and the abuses of the people surrounding this election. And unfortunately, the news has been bad. There's no other way to put it. The reporting has made it very clear that the election itself was just one small part of this, that the people are being abused and are being manipulated and lied to and exploited. And it has been a very difficult conversation to have, and we're very grateful to be able to have it. And it's very important that we continue to put pressure on the international community to not recognize these elections because they are fraudulent, and to not recognize the illegitimate military imposed government because it is not democratic and it does not represent Myanmar. But before we end, I want to give you the opportunity to speak freely and address the audience. If there is anything that we haven't covered, either today or in the previous two episodes, or if there is anything that you want to say, any message that you want to give, I just would invite you to share any thoughts that you have for our audience today.
I also mentioned about the community researcher's voice. Now, I bring here the community researcher's voice. So it is very true, the election, this sham election is very sham election, just sham election. So the people are threatening to give vote of their vote, and people they don't know who they give who is the candidate. They just click here and that. But the result are also people already know the election result, what will happen the election result. So the people already know the military would take this position. They everywhere they will take the vote. They will take all the vote. Most of the vote. Now they will take. They know well. This is well. Military is well organized. Well organized mean like all the election process are not systematic and not all well organized, but well sham election. I don't know how to say. So immediately I don't have that much how to speak out, but but I really want to request the international people not to accept these elections and not to work with the military organizations, not to recognize the military organizations, and I also want to request that international people to work with the NUG government.
Thank you for being a part of this conversation and joining our global community of listeners. Here at Insight Myanmar Podcast, we see our platform as a space where stories, reflections, and experiences come together. to create deeper understanding and foster meaningful connections. Each conversation is an invitation to strengthen the ties that reveal our shared humanity, which is grounded in a sense of care towards Myanmar and its people. And this work is made possible only through the generosity and support of listeners like you. Your contributions enable us to continue amplifying these voices, sharing these important stories, and connecting us all through the power of dialogue. And so by giving, you're not just supporting a production, you're actively nurturing a growing community of insight and compassion. So if you found value in what we share, we invite you to help us sustain and expand this platform. Every donation, no matter the size, helps us to keep this effort alive. Visit insightmyanmar.org/donation to make a contribution and be a part of the shared journey.
Yarananda, 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 Yarananda,